Welcome to Shanahan on Literacy, the site where we believe there is nothing more noble than to teach somebody to read. I'm Tim Shanahan, your host, and today we're going to talk about tracing and other multi-sensory teaching approaches. This is a blast from the past. This blog first appeared on May 16th, 2020, so quite a while ago, and this is an updated version that is dropping on June 22nd, 2024. The research references in this blog have been updated, and I hope I've smoothed out some of the writing a bit as well. If you are interested in the 26 comments that the original entry elicited, there's a link on the Shanahan on Literacy site. You can just go to What About Tracing and Other Multi-Sensory Teaching Approaches, or just look for the June 22nd, 2024 blog entry at Shanahan on Literacy, and you should be able to click on the link and it'll take you right to that original blog entry. At the time, I had received the following letter from a teacher. I have read the work of researchers like Louisa Mautz, Stanislaus Dehaene, and Linnea Airey, and understand how reading works in the brain. I understand the critical role of connecting graphemes to phonemes. My question is, what is the true role of the kinesthetic activities promoted in many intervention programs? In a webinar that I watched, the speaker mentioned several times how critical it is that we have students trace the words because this created neural pathways. What does the research say about this? Well, this idea of tracing words to improve literacy has been around now for more than a century. You'd think by now we'd have a clear idea on whether tracing and all the other haptic and kinesthetic training procedures help, and if so, how they help and why they help. But you'd be wrong. This method was first described by Grace Fernald and Helen Keller in 1921. Fernald, a clinical psychologist with a practice focused on reading improvement, applied the method with severely disabled readers. By all accounts, she was a remarkable teacher, and her article described what she did and how well it worked. The kids she worked with learned to read. She didn't devote much space to explaining why tracing was supposed to be such a boon, but she certainly proposed it. Her idea, of course, caught on and ended up in several remedial reading programs, most notably in the one created by Gillingham and Stillman, now referred to as the Orton-Gillingham or the OG method. And via that route, there are now several commercial instructional programs aimed at dyslexia that include tracing and air writing and that sort of thing. Over time, these VAKT practices, VAKT is visual, auditory, kinesthetic, tactile. These practices have accumulated several explanations for why they're effective. Many of these explanations focus on memory, claiming that tracing builds neural pathways or that it reinforces visual auditory pathways in the brain through physical movement and touch. There are also attentional and perceptual explanations, and there have been many a rationale based on whatever the current thinking on brain architecture and neural processing may be at any given time. Some of these explanations have fallen by the wayside as it's become apparent that they are out of sync with how the brain works, and many of these are still really unresolved. Personally, I'm more in the attention camp. I'm not convinced that these practices create any special neural routes or facilitate the pairing of alternative paths that's typical of any kind of learning. My guess, and this is no more than a guess, and my guess is not necessarily any better than yours, is that the various kinesthetic schemes simply increase the amount of time that readers spend looking at letters and words. Better attention often translates to more learning. Attention is not trivial, so if tracing gets kids to look better or longer, it could be mathemagenic. That just means mathemagenic behavior is an action that somebody takes that gives rise to learning. Think of many study skills. They often work because they get students to spend more time thinking about the ideas in text by highlighting or note-taking. When youngsters simultaneously look at a word, say its name, and trace its letters, It's possible that they're improving word memory for some subtle neurological reason, but it seems more likely that they're just spending more time looking at the words, and this may encourage or facilitate phonological stretching, you know, that is drawing out the pronunciation of a word to highlight the phonological parts and make them more phonetically accessible. That might be a part of it as well. Of course, providing a rationale for why tracing works assumes that it does, which raises a big, not so fast. Unfortunately, though, educators have tilled these fields for 100 years, it's unclear whether tracing and these other similar schemes actually work, whether they help kids learn. I often hear from parents and educators who tell me that Orton-Gillingham is the gold standard of reading interventions. However, the research studies do not provide as glowing an endorsement. Kids don't seem to read better if they're taught with OG, whether there's tracing or not. Part of the problem is that these instructional procedures have never gained much sustained attention from the scientific community, so deep understanding is not likely. Often when there's a lot of study of an issue, we start to figure them out a lot better. That's not been the case here. Making it even more difficult to sort out is the fact that many of the studies have been small, often with only two or three children, quite diverse in outcomes and types of students served. Certainly, there are some studies that support the idea of teaching reading or aspects of reading, such as letter recognition or blending, with multi-sensory approaches. Many of the studies that have been done have been conducted with non-alphabetic languages like Japanese or Chinese. None of the studies done in Western languages controlled for the time differences and how long the students were looking at the words. That's neither supportive nor does it reject my supposition about attention. There are some studies that support tracing, but many more and better done studies have reported no clear or consistent benefits. There are still other studies showing that tracing can actually be distracting or irrelevant, leading to lower performance when compared to more traditional visual auditory approaches to decoding. After 100 years, I still can't tell you if tracing improves learning when it comes to reading. And I know some of you believe that it does, but we really don't have evidence of that. Of course, several instructional programs incorporate tracing, and some of those programs are effective. We have studies showing that they can work. Unfortunately, studies of those kinds of programs can't reveal the impact of tracing because those programs include much more than that. Maybe the tracing's an effective ingredient, or maybe it's inert, just wasting a bit of time. It's even possible that it's disruptive, but if so, it's not so damaging as to outweigh the program benefits in those cases. Perhaps if tracing supports more thorough and careful looking and listening, it's beneficial. When it doesn't do that, it may have no impact whatsoever. And when learners get all wrapped up in rubbing the letters or dipping their fingers in goop, it could be a distraction that reduces learning. As a teacher, I would not seek out multisensory programs, so I wouldn't necessarily avoid them either. If I were using such a program, I'd do what I could to ensure that the tracing wasn't distracting the students from matching sounds and spellings by ear and eye. I prefer having students seeing the words and hearing the sounds while tracing. I'm not a big fan of air tracing, despite its effectiveness in Japanese character memorization. Tracing, if it's to be used at all, should slow students down, focus their attention on the letters, and helping them to think about the letters and sounds more thoroughly and carefully. The teacher who uses this method must be vigilant to make sure that it delivers. And with that, that's the final word I have to say about tracing. We're clearly not there yet, but it definitely isn't a part of the science of reading. It isn't something that really has sufficient research evidence behind it to get any kind of a reasonable endorsement. Again, if you're interested in either getting a written copy of this or going back and seeing the comments that folks made to the original version of this, or are interested in the 20 research references that are included, go to Shanahan on Literacy for the June 22nd issue and look for what about tracing and other multi-sensory teaching approaches. With that, I want to thank Greg Johnson, our sound engineer, and thank you for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you up the road a piece.